Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, June 12th. My name is Magnus Teevil. Joining me in the studio here is Peter Haskett.
Haskell. Peter Raymond Haskell. Or Peter R.H. I like to go by that.
Sounds very distinguished. You're listening to Speak Up for this morning, and we're happy to be here, and we're glad you're here with us, too. We have some interesting stuff we're going to talk about. We have an interview with filmmaker Alanise Obaswam. She has an exhibition at the Vancouver Art Gallery right now. And we have an interview with her that's going to come up in a few minutes. We're going to be chatting with Peter a little later in the show. We have Looking at Lime towards the end of the show, plus some great music, the weather, and a whole bunch more. Let's get started with... we're going to start things off, though, with Bird Note this morning, one of our favorite features on this program. And let's go with that. And then we'll be following that with our interview with Alanise Obaswam.
This is Bird Note. Some bird names might make you go, huh? Snake eagles, eagle owls, hawk eagles, sparrow hawks, bat falcons, quail doves. They sort of sound like bizarre science experiments. Well, some species are named for what they eat, like snake eagles. Some names refer to another bird they resemble, like quail doves, which are part of the dove family. Compared to those names, maybe the gull-billed tern doesn't sound quite as outlandish. They're terns with black caps and unusually thick bills, like a gull. This lets them eat more types of prey than other terns, which rely on fish. Gull-billed terns tackle crabs and lizards on the ground, catch flies, and even steal chicks from other birds. These crafty terns are found nesting in colonies along the coasts of South and Central America, as well as the Southeast U.S. and California. Human activities like boating or construction work can lead gull-billed terns to abandon their nests. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service considers the species a bird of conservation concern. That means they could become endangered if actions aren't taken to protect them soon. Birds like the gull-billed tern stretch our minds with their amazing adaptations. So the least we can do is get creative with naming them. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
At the Vancouver Art Gallery, they have a new exhibition just opened a week ago. It's called The Children Have to Hear Another Story, Alanise Obaswam. Alanise is Abenaki filmmaker and activist who started making films in the 1960s, very early, and she's motivated... Her initial motivation for starting this work was simply that the stories she heard about Indigenous people through the media and through education and other stories, other places that were not the ones the children needed to hear. They were not not the stories of the Indigenous people themselves, but you know the mainstream culture, the mainstream media sort of reinterpretation of those stories and of that representation, which often wasn't very flattering or appropriate for children to grow up with. So she became very interested in finding a way to tell those stories. One of the ways was making films, and she became connected with the Canada's National Film Board, who helped produce films she created. But she was also very interested in creating educational materials and curriculum materials for schools, and particularly for schools teaching Indigenous children. And the exhibition down at the Vancouver Art Gallery tells that story and shows a lot of those films and materials, and it's a really fascinating story. I was able to attend the opening on April 6th, the sort of pre-night opening, and that was great. And Vivian was down again to the art gallery to meet with Elenice for an interview last week, and this is that story. The exhibition itself runs until August 7th. This summer, so you have a lot of time for it. And here's Vivian's interview.
My name is Elenice Obomsawu. I am a Wambanaki woman, which means nations who used to own all New England, the Eastern Township in Canada, part of Quebec, part of Ontario, very large nation where many groups lived in different places with a different name, but were all part of the Confederacy of the Wambanaki.
Came here together to talk about your new exhibition here in Vancouver, the Art Gallery. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
This exhibition is the second one. The first one was in Berlin, and there was a lot of research done to be able to show all this work. It's like at least 60 years of my work as a filmmaker, as a singer, and printmaker, stuff like that. And it was very, very well organized and very well researched. Mm-hmm. Big, too. When I was in Berlin, I was very impressed. And then it has come here now. It's the second place. And that's also very touching. I see all the work they've done to put this together, and it's beautiful the way it's... You need a lot of space to... They go by decades, seeing what I was doing, and it's very interesting.
And why did you decide to do this exhibition, and what was your main goal with that?
Well, I never decided to make the exhibition. I was approached because somebody wanted to do it. It wasn't my idea. I would never think like that. But as I said before, it happened in Berlin, and I was extremely surprised that people from another country would have such interest on my work. It was unbelievable. And then, well, Canada has seen this, and they asked to have it here. And then it's going to go to Toronto, and then to Montreal. And partly it's going to go to New Zealand. So there's a lot of interest that is coming out of... from seeing, I guess, all this material.
And who do you think is the target of this exhibition?
The whole country, because it's our people, it's our country, and we have nations in every province in Canada, and our people are very much alive and very beautiful and have a lot to give. And if you just think of the different language, for instance, which is very rich, the traditions, the history, the culture, it addresses everybody.
Since you started your work or your research on indigenous history, what changed so far, and where do you see issues still?
There is such a difference that it's even hard to describe. I'm 90 years old, and when I went to school, it was a horrifying experience here. It's very different now. Where we were punished if we spoke our language, today they're teaching it. They're encouraged to teach it. And a lot of the universities, different languages are being taught, you know, depending on the area or the province. and the nations, of course, and the history. And I think, I know that in general, Canadians are very interested in the history of this country, the real history, told by our people, written by our people. And it's very rich. There's plenty of books that's been done. And there's a lot of films, a lot of documentary. There's a lot of material there for people who teach to use. And it's the time is so different. It's like being in a different world. Mm-hmm. Our people are respected. They're well received everywhere. There are possibilities for our young people to do anything they want. If ever it was possible, it's right now, mm-hmm. which means any discipline. And I would say that it's just remarkable. And we're continuing, and it's more than hope. It's very profound, the difference.
Yeah, how did you got involved, and how did you start? So you always tell different stories. So I was wondering, what is your story? How did you start with all of this work here that is shown at the exhibition?
I started from going through misery and terrible educational system and very racist and terrible stuff. So, you know, not just me, but you react at one point and you want to change and you fight for everything. And you do things yourself, and you influence other people, and it's just a big war. And I think that we have won many, many things that is very different now.
Your work is also education, and this exhibition's name is "The Children Have to Hear Another Story." What do you think does that mean?
It means that you have to stop teaching the phony story, the lies and things against our people. That's what it means. Mm-hmm. And they have to hear the real story of what is the history of their people, what is the language, what is the history. That's what it means, and it's happening now.
And you just said it. You are 90 years old, and you have heard many different stories. So which story stick to you the most, and which story influenced you till today?
It's not just one story. It's all our stories. Our people are thousands of years old in telling stories. So every nation has something incredible to teach you and to hear. It's very rich.
I was also wondering, how did your work influence you as a person, and did it change you as a person?
My work have been fighting since I'm very, very young, and I know that I influence big changes in every aspect mm-hmm. of our lives. And I've come to a place now where I don't have to fight that hard. There's a lot of changes happening, and a lot of people want to help. And I mean institution, government, all kinds of things. So we still have to fight for certain things, but we can. Mm-hmm. And there's no intimidating anymore like there used to be. Mm-hmm. Finish.
Yeah. There's still things we have to work on, so what things do we still have to work on? What do you think?
Well, you know, we have to work on what happened with the treaties and correct them. And in some cases, there will be new treaty made. In some areas, it's happening. In some areas, there were no treaties. There will be treaties eventually because everything was stolen and everything was dishonest. And I think there's a lot of people in power and people of other nations who are ashamed of it. They want to see this be corrected. And that's where we're going.
Mm-hmm. And we're also talking about the future and what's going on right now, and we still have things to work on. So have you heard about the Willow Project and that it's like going on right now in Alaska? Have you heard about that?
No.
So the Willow Project is a project that's kind of tries to get oil in Alaska, and it also affects indigenous communities, and was now newly approved by Joe Biden in America. How does it make you feel that we still have these issues and that still people, like indigenous people, have to fight against such things? How does it make you feel?
Well, you know, it's like nothing new. People have... here in BC, the Chilcotin people just have won the title to back to their land. And so the lumbering and all those things that they were doing against the land, really, against the people, he stopped. And a lot of people are fighting against those things that are making, poisoning the water, or, you know, deranging nature and all its life. And that concerns electricity, it concerns everything. So there's a lot to be studied, why and how, and how do you provide for the people. And there's a lot of work to be done. But everything is possible now. It's very different than before.
I'm part of the younger generation, so how can a younger generation do something for the indigenous community, and how can the younger generation give the indigenous community or indigenous communities a voice, and how can we make a change?
It's made the change. You sound like nothing has happened. You know, it's the contrary. And I think young people have a voice, and they're not afraid to speak, and they're not afraid to go study or ask for anything to do in life. That's extraordinary. That's happening right now. It's happening for quite a while. So it's not thinking, oh, I'm going to fight for the future to have a proper school. We're there.
Swam, Abenaki filmmaker, educator, and singer. This is her at the Vancouver Art Gallery last week as part of the opening ceremony. And I was able to record that at the opening ceremony. She made a presentation to bit of a talk and a presentation to the attendees, and then followed up with that wonderful, wonderful song. Thank you to Vivian for the interview. That was really nice. Quite a moving interview. Elenise Obaswam, the exhibition, which is entitled, let me just make sure I read it properly, The Children Have to Hear Another Story, runs until August 7th at the Vancouver Art Gallery, and I hope you can make it out there. And it is National Indigenous Peoples Month across Canada, and there are many things you can do as part of reconciliation, but learning more about learning more about Alanis Obaswam and going to view this exhibition is one small thing you can do, which is also very interesting, and I think it's a worthwhile exhibition. That segment and interview was originally recorded in April, but I wanted to bring it back for National Indigenous Peoples Month, and it is National Indigenous Peoples Day on June 21st, and you can find lots more online about activities and events celebrating that day. The exhibition at the Vancouver Art Gallery runs until August 7th, so you have lots of time to get down there and check it out. The Art Gallery has introduced a whole bunch of new membership options, and a couple new things are every Friday evening, the last Friday evening of the month, rather, is free admission to the gallery. It's pretty popular, so you do have to register ahead of time and choose a time slot to show up. You can't just sort of walk up. That replaces their old Tuesday night by donation option, which was in place for many, many years. They also have, which is a pretty good deal, an annual member pass or access pass, which is only about $60 or $5 a month, which gives you as many admissions to the art gallery as you want throughout the year, which is actually a pretty good deal. They have a lot of interesting stuff down there. Have you gone down to the art gallery, Peter?
Haven't gone there for a while. I'm a bit critical of it, actually. So,
yeah.
I got you on your toes with that one.
Tell me very briefly what your criticisms are. I can imagine. I mean, any institution like that is has its good points and bad points.
Well, first of all, I think it ought to be free all the time because it gets public money.
Yeah.
I think you talk about the problems with the art world. It's many. Abstract expressionism came about in the 1950s to sort of censure the other movements previously. I think that the Rockefellers and so on didn't really want express that much. I mean, it was one of the Rockefellers who started the Museum of Modern Art in 1929. And all of modernism was placed in that context.
Yep.
So, sorry for being a bit controversial there.
Well, you know, I agree with you on the point of galleries like that ought to be free. I mean, a lot of it has to do with funding, and they're not given the funding to be able to operate on a free basis. You know, in England, in the UK, you know, most of the major galleries, at least the ones that are sort of state-run, like, for instance, the National Gallery, which is right in central London, are free. And I lived in London for a little while when I was younger, and it was kind of amazing that you could drop by the gallery and whenever you were in the area and pop in and look around. And it was something you could do normally. It wasn't a big expense. It wasn't something that cost you a lot of money. It wasn't something that had to be a once-in-a-while thing because of the cost. And you didn't feel like, oh, well, I paid a lot of money to get into this gallery. Now I have to go around and see everything because it's so costly. You could pop in, see one gallery, take it in, you know. I mean, I don't know about you, but there's a limit to how much things you can take in a session, you know. I mean, is it better to see 50 pieces of art and contemplate them properly or go around and see 300 pieces of art? That feels like a rush. Anyway, I also think for museums and stuff, you know, here in BC, we have the Royal BC Museum over in Victoria. And in many ways, it ought to be free. And it used to be free, you know.
Yeah, the one in Victoria was free for a long time.
Yeah. And that makes them way more accessible. To everybody, but, it makes a big difference because local people will just include it as part of their environment as opposed to it being a large cost and it becomes more focused on attracting tourists. Anyway, you know, I think these things should be way more accessible to people.
Well, I think that the amount of money spent on it,
mm-hmm.
it'd be better to spend less money on it and to make it free than to be having like a big show and having it for a fee. Because I find it, I don't know, I like, I don't know what the hell sometimes is in that gallery. And it's not like, oh, here I am, I got this thing in. It's like, oh, this is important. We spent this money on it. You got to spend money to go to it. And I find a lot of it questionable, quite frankly.
Right.
That I wouldn't find it questionable if it was just, oh, it's free and didn't cost the taxpayers a dime for this thing to be in there. Anybody can be in there who wants to be.
Yeah.
But that's not what the process is for the Vancouver Gallery.
Well, I mean, I guess either the taxpayer has to pay for it to be free, or sponsors, who are mostly going to be, you know, corporations, are going to have to pay for it.
Well,
it's going to have to be the way it is often.
Well, I think they're a bit greedy.
Not accessible.
I think they're a bit greedy because they want the public money. They want the public to pay for it, and they want the corporations to go in there,
yeah.
which gets them free advertising, or not free advertising, paid yeah. advertising. So, I mean, I think they're a thing onto itself that does not have the public in mind in many times. I don't think they have a sense of what their accountability is to the public. And that's just my – not that you can't yeah. have anything – I haven't been there for a while. Used to go over there free yeah. Tuesdays.
All right. Well, let's talk about the weather here quickly for Vancouver. Thanks for that little debate, Peter. It's an important issue, I think, that ought to be talked about more, about the accessibility of these kinds of institutions. But anyway, back to the weather. It's going to be a nice day today. Highs up to 22. Things are going to start shifting tomorrow with some cloud and a bit of rain coming in. A bit more of that on Wednesday. And then the later part of the week is calling for cloudy and rain through to Sunday. So that's your forecast for the week. Nice for the next couple of days, getting a little more gloomy towards the end of the week, but maybe all those, maybe a bit of rain is what we need to set the wildfires back on their heels. All right, here's a song from Misha and the Spanx. This is called I Was Gonna. Misha and the Spanx, that was I Was Gonna, and that's from their album Unconditional Love in Hi-Fi. Next up is our regular segment on Mondays, looking at Lyme, and today, looking at Lyme is going to be talking to Dr. Nicholas Arson.
Not that long ago, meditation was thought of as a mysterious activity practiced by spiritual folk in faraway lands. Today, people all over the world are either giving it a try or making it a part of their daily lives. Let's explore how meditation practice can support people in their healing as they recover from Lyme disease. Nicholas Arsenault has been guiding meditations for several years and is studying under Tara Brock and Jack Kornfield. Nicholas was originally drawn to meditation through his own experience with Lyme disease. In this podcast, we will learn how his meditation practice helped him to block out the noise, turn inward, and heal. It is so fabulous to have you on our podcast, Nicholas.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
It seems like so long ago I first met you through mutual friends when you were first diagnosed with Lyme. And like so many of us, we just reach out to total strangers to either offer or seek support.
You were the first person I spoke with that had Lyme as we began this journey. And I think I've paid it forward by talking to dozens and dozens since.
Truly. Well, I'm super grateful to have you here. How did you find your way to meditation?
Well, as you know, and many of your listeners know, the